And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Happy birthday.
That's enough with the Marilyn. Welcome to the show. So it's my birthday. Thank God I'm alive another year, another day. It's truly amazing, by the way, to be alive this long and to have survived this long and, moreover, to have thrived this long. Because, to be honest with you, I felt older in my 30s than I do now. And I want to talk about that maybe a little bit today. Because there's a lot of guys in their 30s who are looking to this show for guidance, leadership, enthusiasm, I don't know what. And they're burned out. And what they don't understand is that it's easy to be very old at 30 in this country, maybe in every country. I can't speak for any other country. I just know this country is where I was born. And being 30 in this world that we live in is a tough time for people. I guess men or women, I can't speak for women, but I would imagine it's harder for women than men. But 30 is a big, big time in a person's life and very hard. And frankly, it's not as hard getting old as you may think or older. It may be easier in some ways if you keep your health. And the key is to keep your health and to keep your head up into the wind. Ask anyone who's learned how to fly an airplane. Is that's all about the attitude of the airplane. Attitude, A-T-T, not altitude. The attitude, the nose must always be kept up in order to make sure that you have enough lift on that plane. It's the same in your life. No matter what hits you, keep your head up. And that's my birthday message to the American people today. I want to talk about politics and not wallow in this birthday business because I'm not 8 years old with a pointy hat. And for the first time in many years, I am not having a party. The reason I'm not having a party is because I had one last year and no one ever invited me anywhere after it, so I should have another one. It's the same every year. I'm the kind of guy who organizes parties and then I have them and I can't wait to leave. And by the time the day comes around, I ask myself, why did I have another party? I didn't even really want it. I don't enjoy the food. I'm focused on making sure the people there are happy. So you become a glorified event coordinator rather than anyone enjoying themselves. So I figured just let it go. You know what I mean? What's the good of it? But, you know, what you're tuning in for today is politics, 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 and more. And it's Trump, Cruz, Trump, Cruz, Trump, Cruz, Trump, Cruz, Trump, Cruz. Cruz, Trump, Cruz, Trump, Cruz, Trump. So I have a couple of questions for you that came to me in my sleep. If you are a Trump supporter today and Ted Cruz wins the nomination, would you support him or would you sit out the election? Or would you be a fool and vote for Hillary as a protest vote? Conversely, let's say you're a Ted Cruzite, a supporter of him, and Trump wins the nomination. Would you support him? Would you sit out the election, Mr. Cruz supporter, or vote for Hillary as a protest? See, I think the Cruz supporters are more fanatical than the Trump supporters. They're more, in their own minds, purist than the Trump supporters are. And as such, I think that they're fanatics, and they're liable to do something as crazy as vote for Hillary as a protest vote, but I'm not sure. And then there's a couple other questions I'm going to put out there that I really want to talk about, because the key to talk radio is to be interested in the subjects. And the other day I talked about artificial intelligence and robots, quite by chance, and we learned about robots the size of postage stamps that cost $1 million apiece. That could be armed to blow up. I thought that was astounding. I had never heard about that. We know about the Predator drones. I didn't know about postage stamp drones that are the size of bumblebees that could be released upon our enemies. Perhaps if we get someone like Hillary, she'd release 10,000 bees at the next Republican convention and get rid of all of her opposition and be Madam Mao Tse-Tung finally, her lifetime dream. But I was thinking that one day, I believe we're going to have an artificially intelligent president. Because right now, I know we have an artificially intelligent president in the human form. He's a construct of the media. He's not as intelligent as his voice would lead you to believe he is. He is a complete and total fraud. He's Al Sharpton in a nicer suit. But the fact of the matter is, if you could create an AI president, what would his policies be if you were a conservative? In other words, I'm being very, very serious. I laid in bed last night and I said, what if I could create or model a computer president and get rid of the elections? Just make a perfect president a computer, in other words, runs the country, a HAL 9000, okay, to go back to that movie. Finally, we're fed up with the human form because they're all flawed like we are. So we want a perfect brain running the country. Someone that can't be assaulted by low-life drunks in the media like Chris Matthews. Someone who cannot be assaulted by twisted sisters like Rachel Madcap. Someone who cannot be set up by the chorus boy, Anderson Cooper. And we're done with all of this idiotic, moronic stuff in a world at war with radical Islam. We're not listening to these fools and twisted sisters. And so we come to a point in American history when we create or program, by consensus now, a computer to run the country. If you are a conservative, I want you to tell me what you would have this computerized president enact in this country. If you are a diehard socialist liberal, you hate this country because it's not perfect enough for you. So this is open to you psycho progressives as well. I know many of you listen to me because there's very little intelligence in the AM radio sphere. And when you hear intelligence, you react to it, even though you may disagree with it. So try to be intelligent. If you call up and insult me, I'm hanging up on you. I'm not interested in it. I got a bit of a headache. I don't really want to put up with fools right now, but I do want to have an intelligent discussion. If you're a progressive and you could program a computer to be the president of the United States, what policies would you have this computer enact? Would it be open borders and why? Try to explain why you want the country flooded with third world flotsam and jetsam. Tell me what's in it for you. Tell me how it would improve your life to flood America with flotsam and jetsam that the whole world doesn't want. How do you benefit from that? Put down your textbook Marx for a moment and think about it. So both sides of the aisle. And that's number one, that's number two, that's number three. Now, I want to take on another question, another problem. Boy, I got loads of, wow, Cruz supporters, Trump supporters, what they're going to do. This is astounding. Do you know that the key to talk radio is being able to conceptualize a question for the audience that they're actually going to want to think about? And if you can't do it, get out of the business and let those of us who can. It's not about screaming and yelling and putting someone down every second of the day. I mean, the object of talk radio is talk. And as I learned a long time ago from my dear friend Lin Yu Tang, the Chinese essayist, who's been dead about 60 years, he wrote that the purpose of conversation is to converse with verse. The object of a conversation is not to defeat the other person and shut them up. The object is to have a conversation that goes on and on and on. That's conversation with friends. Even with people who are friends who you don't agree with, it's still a conversation if you're a human being. So I'm trying to have a conversation on these subjects. And there's another topic out there, which is Trump in it for real? And I thought about that long and hard because people keep bringing it up because of campaign. One of his campaign women came out with an essay this week saying she knew him from the beginning. He never thought he'd get this far. He's shocked. He's not really in it. He's going to drop out. So I thought about that. I guess I've heard this from the beginning. Listen to me very clearly on this. Here's what I've come to. Is Trump in this for real? You want my answer? Because you're going to get it right now. I'm not holding it back. No tease. This man is not like Anderson Cooper. This man has a family. A large family. A lovely family that he loves. This man has grandchildren that he loves. Would he have put them in the risk that he's put them if he wasn't in it for real? ISIS has threatened to kill him. The Mexican drug lord has threatened to kill him. George Soros is trying to kill him every day with the psycho fanatics in the streets. So I'm convinced 100% he's in it for real. Whether he was originally intending to get this far, I have no idea. But I know right now Donald Trump is in this for real. And he's demonstrating a steely resolve, despite all of the slings and arrows of outrageous media fools, that he will do his job as president with the energy, vigor, and determination that must be brought to this task. And those, my friends, are the observations and questions for the beginning of the Savage Nation. This is my birthday program. I'm not going to disclose my exact age. I never thought I'd live to the age of 39, but I did, and here I am. Jack Benny and I reached 39, a few decades after him. But, you know, it's been said that you're only as old as you feel. And although I have a perfectly fine cardiovascular system with the worst lipid profile in the history of mankind, with no heart attack yet, I'm knocking on my head. Lipids are upside down, LDL reversed, HDL reversed. I do not take any of the Lipitor-type compounds because they cripple me. I tried a new one again 2 weeks ago. One pill, 5 milligrams, I was crippled for 3 days. My body won't take it. It's poison. So the fact of the matter is I just go on and on and on. I mean, I'm saturated with ascorbic acid. I'm saturated with tocopherols. I'm saturated with other nutrients, which I've written about over the years as a fellow who's studied nutrition for so many decades. I do what I practice what I preach. I've watched my diet to a 95-point percentile. I know what not to eat, but sometimes I eat it. Okay, it's that simple. But by and large, I'm still alive. So the question is, what am I about to tell you about longevity that you don't already know? I don't know, maybe you know something I don't know about yourself. Whatever you do, don't fall for the lie, oh, my grandfather lived to 98 and he drank and smoked every day. I covered that in 1991 in a book of mine where I wrote, sure, we all know about people like that. They can violate all the common sense rules of life and live long, but I call them nutritional rogues. They're not the norm. These are people who can abuse themselves and live to 100. That's not what you can do. Unless you think, unless you want to gamble that you're a nutritional rogue, you're probably not going to get there. Your body will break down at 50. You'll start to fall apart at 50, I can guarantee you. And you probably won't even make it to 60 as a whole man. So anyway, occasionally I go to a cardiologist for what reason I don't know, other than to find out my lipids are upside down and get another blood test and see that my lipids are still upside down, because we don't do anything about it except what I've been doing. But I like him. He's a very smart man. I love talking about biochemistry with him. And he said he once had a patient that was 95. And I said, well, what did he tell you was his secret to longevity? And he said to me, doctor, never let an old person live in your body. And that's such a beautiful statement when you think about it. Because when I was 30, I felt older than I do now. I look back at my journals from 1965, 66. I was like an old guy. Woe is me. The world is terrible. What's wrong? Why can't I get anywhere? I was an old guy. And as I look back, I know what did it to me. It was marijuana. Marijuana is one of the most severely depressive drugs that you could ever put into your body. It doesn't get you high. It destroys your mind and your soul. I can tell you right now, you may not know it now. It will destroy you. And that's the reason that it's being pushed down your throat as something healthful, like an herb from God. It is not an herb from God. It's an herb from the devil. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCO. We have the Toon Weavers. We have Leslie Gore, who I never heard of. Is that Al Gore's daughter, Leslie? Big deal. What's a birthday mean anyway? It's a tombstone marker. That's about it. So if you're a Trump supporter and Cruz wins the nomination, would you support him, sit out the election, or vote for Hillary as a protest? If you are a Cruz supporter and Trump wins the nomination, would you support him, sit out the election, or vote for Hillary as a protest? If you could create an AI president, what would its policies be? What would the machine's policies look like? Whether you're progressive or conservative, you must have something in mind. What do you progressives do is riot and scream and blow whistles and throw things at police horses. What is it that you really want to happen in this country? Have you thought it through? Or you're just like a bunch of children throwing things and you have no real vision? He's homophobic. He's a racist. Well, what would your perfect computer do to make it a perfect world? Anyone out there? Is there a progressive able to formulate a thought without soiling their clothing when they're actually given an opportunity? Here's the podium. Open a lineup, Rock. Jim, keep one open line for a rational progressive who's going to call the Savage Nation and tell us what the perfect artificially intelligent computer as president would do for the country. I want to know. WABC, Kenny, you're the first up. What's on your mind? What would you do? How would you program your computer?
I would, well, the thing is, like, it's actually, programming a computer is not really practical because problems come up that you can't.
All right, please, we're not talking about programming computers. I'm asking about an artificially intelligent president. You're on a national show. Articulate.
Well, what I'm saying is that you can't just have, you can't pre-program a president. You need to have that on the moment he'll have to make decisions and see things and be able to connect the dots between different points and different issues.
Well, why is that? You can create almost every possible scenario for a computer. There aren't that many possible things that could happen. You can run, how many permutations and combinations do you think a computer is capable of analyzing in a millisecond? Millions. So how many different permutations, combinations of any social or economic issue cannot be programmed into a machine?
I don't have an opinion on that. There's many, many, many different small, minor things that can blow up to become big issues that you would never expect them to become big issues. And now,
give me an example of an issue that a computer couldn't handle better than a man.
Let's say, the Islamic terrorism that we have over here.
Thank you. So now run 1,000 different things that the Islamo-fascists could possibly do. The computer can answer any one of 1,000 different things and how to answer it. I don't see why it's so complicated. I think we'd be better off with a computer than with Hillary Clinton, by the way. She's a computer in sweatpants.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage. It'll do for my birthday. I couldn't tell you about it on the radio because it's a family show. Welcome back to the program. My son asked me when we were on a boat a couple of weeks ago, what would I like ideally for my birthday? I said, this is a family cruise. Don't ask me such questions. I'd like to be with my family. That's what I'd like to be. So, you know, my most interesting question is not if you're a Trump supporter or a Cruz supporter, the other one wins, would you sit it out, vote for the other, whatever. That's a good one. I'm more interested in if we could create an AI president, what would you have it do? Conservative or progressive? And so far, not one caller. Not one progressive has the guts to call the show. Because as I have discovered, they're basically destructive. They only want to tear things down. They have no constructive ideas. If you ask a progressive who's always complaining and moaning and putting down America, what is it you really want? How would you enact it? They have no answers for you. What, do they just simply call NPR and confer with each other? What ideas do you have? No answer. You're talking to one of the leading talk shows in the country with a huge audience. You have an opportunity to be heard. And if you get on the show, you'll be heard by more people than you've met in your entire life, even if you're a professor at NYU. The audience at any 15 minutes is larger than all your classes together from the time you started as a TA. That's right, over 300,000 people every 15 minutes listen to the show. That means every 15 minutes there's a new 300,000 person audience. That's the average quarter hour, something you don't learn in universities where there's no consequence to bad behavior, bad teaching, or stupidity. We live and die by our show. We're only as good as yesterday's program. And in fact, if we make one mistake, we're out of business. That's called a tightrope. It's a good place to be if you know how to walk the tightrope. And as the great Santini once told me personally, never step off that tightrope unless you're thrown off. So that's what I'd like to talk about. And so in order to introduce this topic of the perfect computer, we have a treat for you. Remember that movie, 2001? By Kubrick. I remember exactly where I was in 1970 when it came out. I was in the CinemaScope Theater in Honolulu, Hawaii. I think Obama was born by then. Wasn't he a little kid playing on a scooter somewhere? Yeah, he must have been about 5, 6 years old. I never met him personally. I would have bought him an ice cream cone if I did. I was nice to kids. But I went into that theater and I saw that movie. That movie changed my mind in so many ways. It changed my life. When I saw the future through the eyes of this visionary, Kubrick, especially the space station, where everyone on the space station was a PhD, a doctor. They all spoke to each other as doctor this and doctor that. It was that moment when I decided I would get a PhD from one of the great universities for the future world in which I was going to be living. That's when I made up my mind. It was then, not before then. I knew that the future belonged to the educated. Little did I know that street vermin like Al Sharpton would become more important than the most educated man in America. Little did I know that we'd get a communist president who would try to destroy every institution that was of any value. Little did I know that we'd get someone in the White House who could not even pass the test to be a Secret Service agent because of his known associations with subversives. But the movie did change my mind, and I thank Kubrick for that movie. But there was a great scene in that film where finally Dave, the astronaut, discovers that the computer itself has turned on him and wants to kill him. Remember that incredible scene when he finds out that the thing is trying to close doors on him and lock him out into space? And he finally figures out the computer itself that runs the space station has become malevolent towards him. Remember we talked about that yesterday? Can a computer be programmed to become malevolent? Of course it can. You can have a computer do anything. So, the great interchange. Let's hear it right now, Robert. Chris Matthews after a bender. 855-400-7282. So, yeah, I mean, you can program a computer to do anything that you want it to do. And that great scene with the HAL 2000 in Kubrick's masterpiece. What was it called? 2001? Right. 2001. Indicated a future in which the educated would run the world. And, you know, they really are, when you think about it, the hedge fund geniuses who are generally former mathematicians or physicists, the best ones. They come from the background of being great gamblers. They're part mystics, psychics, and also great mathematical geniuses, the best ones. I don't know if you know that. It's easy, you know, just a pirate. You can't make such decisions if you're stupid. And so, they come from these backgrounds where they're into numerology and things of that nature. Some of them have deeply religious grandparents. They don't even know it in some cases. And they come from a mystical background where they can see through numbers in ways that the ordinary man can't. I mean, I'm not a mathematician. I never was. I don't have a head for numbers. I can run five numbers in a row. A row of one, three, like five times five is about it in my head if I have to. I can't do more than that. But there are people who could do 8x8s, 9x9s, 10x10s, and run them in their head quickly. So, you know, there are smart people out there, and they are running things. I watch a channel sometimes at night about the Mars exploration program that NASA is still conducting. It's awesome to see the faces of intelligence again. The media is filled with such dolts, it's frightening. When I look at the lowlifes who are in the television business, they're all entertainers, and they're bad ones at that, pretending to be, what do you want to call them? Whatever. They hate me. I hate them. Okay, let's be clear. You look at these faces, and you see that these are not the brightest kids in school. These were the kids who couldn't get more than a B in anything. And so they wound up, for some reason, running doing weather somewhere in a remote station, and they worked their way up to New York, and now they're on MSNBC or even on some of the big networks. They're not that smart. And then you crave intelligent faces and intelligent conversation. It's not to be found in the media. So now you turn to politics and you can almost die altogether. You can almost faint. Obama, who is presented as a super intelligent being, is seen to be the charlatan that he is the more we got to know him. Great voice, great delivery, and empty. An empty suit. A very, very malicious, vindictive empty suit. But not that intelligent. If he was that intelligent, he wouldn't be destroying the country that gave him so much, given his lack of actual talent. But nevertheless, so sometimes I have to turn the TV on and look for intelligence. So I turn on the NASA channel, and I see these geniuses who are running the Mars program. I don't know how they do it. They can calculate how to build a rocket to go so far and how much fuel it needs and how to have an astronaut get off and get on and supply it. It's just something remarkable to behold that this is going on in the same world that we live down on the ground, on the elbow-thrashing level of reality, as the Zen Buddhist I know once taught me. In other words, anyone could be a sage, he said to me, the Zen Buddhist, sitting in a temple in the lotus position somewhere in Bolinas, California, in a white robe. You could sit there and pretend that you're something special. But the Zen Buddhist master said that the real test of a master is how he behaves in the elbow-thrashing level of humanity. And that means when you get down on the sidewalk, when there are idiots who walk behind you and almost crash into you, people who come from the suburbs and think that they're sophisticated because they have yellow, because they have green hair and a nose ring. But they don't know how to walk on a sidewalk, so they follow you too closely. In New York, you can get whacked for doing it. In San Francisco, they walk like on your behind. You're walking, you turn around, there's someone on your behind, walking behind you with no space between you and them. They come from Geekland. I never saw anything like it. That's San Francisco, filled with out-of-towners pretending to be cool. That's the elbow-thrashing level of reality. So how do you react to an idiot like that? That's the elbow-thrashing reality. Or you're in Manhattan, rush hour, coming out of Madison Square Garden. I'll never forget when I did my show last year at WABC. I came out in rush hour. The show ended at 5 o'clock. I walk down, take the elevator down, walk out. It's 50 million people coming at you, rushing into Penn Station. I have to walk uptown to my hotel. Because to take a car uptown in rush hour, you got to be insane. The subway, you got to be crazier. So I figured I'd walk and see New York, you know, grab a slice of pizza, which I would eat with my hand, not with a fork, because I'm not from Youngstown, Ohio. But the thing is you walk and you see so many people coming at you, it can overwhelm you if you're going in the wrong direction. How do you react to that? Elbow thrashing level of reality. You're going for a slice of pizza at a busy restaurant, rush hour. Someone elbows you. How do you react to that? That's the elbow thrashing level of reality. That's what tests a person. That's what he meant, the guru. 855-400-7282, phone number. We're just having a nice conversation. I would hope. I'm so tired of the other stuff. I got to tell you that I'd like to have a conversation about a conversation, which is what we're doing, which is what would you do if you could program a computer to be president so we can eliminate human error? And how would you program it if you're a progressive? Thus far, do we have any progressives yet or not? All right, it's possible they don't listen to radio at all. They're too sophisticated. They only listen to NPR to hear themselves talk and to listen to Vivaldi music and think that they're oh, here we go. WFTL Ron, we have a progressive. And the progressive, I'm going to say this right now, I'm not going to ridicule him at all because I have opened the door to someone who has an opposing point of view, and I want to hear it. If you could program a computer to be president, tell us what you would have it do and why. Ron on WFTL, go ahead, please.
Hello, yes. I am more of a centrist, but I am a Bernie Sanders supporter, and here's why. I want to have an honest discussion with you, no name calling, no nothing. I agree that this country needs $15 an hour wages. Why? Because there's people out there, receptionists at doctor's offices, people working at supermarkets making $8.
I think they should make $50 an hour, but who's going to pay for it? Where does the money come from?
It comes from these corporations. They could afford it. That's the thing. $8 an hour, how could you live off that? Can you live off $8 an hour? It's a question that I ask
everyone. Well, no, I've earned minimum wage. No, of course I couldn't live off it. That's why I took another job after that job.
Yeah, but there's certain people who cannot leave their job for any circumstances, whether they have three...
But you're not thinking it through. You assume that the corporations can just pay any amount of money so that the person on the bottom makes more. Are you aware that a company has to make money? Are you aware of that?
Yes, I know that, but Costco's doing it.
See, but now you're changing the discussion. All right, so let's say you think that they should make $50 an hour, and then there would be no profits for, let's say, a fast food chain like McDonald's, and they would go out of business, and you'd wind up with no McDonald's chain. Is that what you want?
No, that's not what I want. What I'm saying is there's people out there, if you want to get rid of the welfare state, the welfare food stamps, increase people's wages, the hardworking Americans that work at doctor's offices who make $9 an hour and they have to work three jobs a day. And I don't understand why people don't see why is that such a radical socialist idea? No.
Well, because it's not radical. It's just that someone has to pay for it.
Yes, but if we could pay stupid wars on lies, then I think we should invest.
Here we go again. So it's all the military budget, which your boss, Obama, has cut the military budget to the bare minimum. How about the moron basketball player who makes $300 million a year? How about him not earning $300 million a year for being an idiot who throws a basketball? What about that? Should that be controlled as well? You're attacking the military. How about attacking the morons with basketballs?
No, see, you're twisting what I said.
No, I'm not twisting. You just said that the money should come from the military.
No.
So now you're arguing what? We don't need a defense department? We need no military at all?
If we have money for wars, that we...
No, don't give me a general statement. You just said raise the minimum wage, and you said take the money from the defense budget. Isn't that what you just said?
No, sir. I did not say that. I said if we have money to go to wars, then we should have money to support...
What do you mean if we have money to go to war? If the Islamo-fascists are blowing up people, what should you do? Bend over to them or fight them?
Fight them, of course. See, you're
All right, so you need money to fight them. Where's the money going to come from if you're paying people a high wage and you don't have the money for it? Okay, so we can't take it from defense. Where should it come from then?
$15 is not a high wage. It's reasonable for a working...
All right, what you don't understand is okay, you're going in circles because you've never run a business of any kind, right?
No, my father, he owns a couple of farmlands in Champaign, Chicago. So
good, I'm glad he does. So would he be willing to pay a farmhand $25 an hour?
He does, actually.
How much does he pay his farmhands?
Now that I don't understand. I don't get into with him, but I do know...
Well, you're such a genius on economics. How much does your father pay farmhands? Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCO. So look, the farmer's son who wanted a higher minimum wage, when I asked him what his father pays the workers, suddenly he didn't have an answer for me. See, when it affects their pocketbook, the progressives go silent. Now, having said that, I and everyone else in this country are weary of this personal fight between Cruz and Trump, and it's got to stop. And if another squabble breaks out between these two guys, that's the end of the campaign for both of them. People will walk away from them in the millions. Either they'll sit the election out saying they're both too idiotic to vote for, or they'll throw a protest vote in the way of Bernie Sanders. I'm warning both of them to stop it. How's that? I'm stepping in like the referee and saying both to Trump and Cruz, cut the crap. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Sorry, we're cruising into hour number two of the Savage Nation. I did what I shouldn't have done during the break, which I do every day, which is eat nuts. They cause an immediate allergic reaction, which causes me to cough and to say to you, I will never eat nuts again. Welcome to the program. We're talking about the issue of a computer for president, because I'm sick and tired of those running for office. And, of course, I have my favorite, because I think he's the only one who can beat the criminal. But if they keep squabbling, as I said in the last hour, if one more major blow-up between Cruz and Trump, that's the end of the election. Millions of people are going to defect. They won't vote for either of them. They'll show that they're both too immature for the job. I'm telling you the way it is. Okay, whether you agree with me, I can tell you the way it is. That's topic one. And so I asked you in the last hour, if you are a Trump supporter and Cruz wins the nomination, would you support Cruz, or would you sit out the election, or worse yet, vote for Hillary as a protest vote? Conversely, if you are a Cruz supporter and Trump wins the nomination, would you support Trump, or would you sit out the election to vote for Hillary as a protest vote? And then libs and cons, or progressives if you want, if you could have a computer for the president, which, by the way, I think that's going to happen one day, we're going to have some vast supercomputer that's going to do a much better job than any human can do. Will not be influenced by a lobbyist. Decisions will be based upon a rational set of data points rather than who's going to grease whose palm, who's going to benefit from it personally. And but you have to program the computer in such a way that the question is, okay, in every case, the computer has to decide what's best for the health of the nation. So, there's the rub, as Shakespeare said. What is best for the nation? From my point of view, borders, language, culture. That's the parameter. Those are the parameters I would set in motion. Every decision would be built around, does this decision better support protected borders? Does this decision of the computerized president best support a common language that unifies the people? Does this decision that the computer is about to make support the founding documents of this nation, the culture, borders, language, culture. So that's how I would have the AI programmed. And I'd like to know what you think. I think it's an interesting question. So I've asked progressives to call because they complain a lot about how bad the society is. But all they seem to want to do is attack things, burn things, and put things down. What are their solutions? And have they thought it through? Gary on WMAL in Washington, D.C., you've taken the bait. Go ahead. You're on the air. You have the floor.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not a progressive, but I'm not a conservative at the same time. I'm kind of right down the middle on most of the issues that are facing this country. But I do believe that a computerized president should... I agree with you. Should weigh out what is exactly best for the country when it comes down to it.
Okay, but let's take an issue. You're on the board here. Is he still there, or do I lose him already? Yeah, okay. So, Gary, I see that you're a progressive, and you say that an AI president should push college for all. Is that your position?
Let's talk about college for all. Okay, let's talk about it.
Well, you're the one who put it up there, not me.
Okay, so college, I believe right now that there's plenty of ways that people, Bernie Sanders' argument is that there's people aren't afforded the opportunity to go to college. I disagree. I think that there's plenty of grants out there. There's plenty of ways that people with student loans that can go to affordable college or community college and not be burdened with tons of debt, you know?
100% right. And thugs and morons who never belonged in college still don't belong in college. All they're going to do is bring the street into the colleges. It's bad enough what they've done to the universities. Take a look at what open admissions have done to the universities already. They turn them into virtual cesspools. They're no longer institutions of higher learning. They're institutions of lower living. All you hear is about sex and how bad America is. That's a college? How much worse can it get?
Michael, Bernie Sanders, a lot of people are twisting it, that he's saying that, you know, Harvard is going to be free. It's not private schools. It's public schools tuition free. And you know what I mean? It's giving people an opportunity, but at the same time, this right now, the country that we're living in...
Let's slow down. I went to Queens College of the City University of New York because my father could not afford to send me to a paid-for college. Some of the kids I went to high school with had fathers who had more money, so they went to so-called out-of-town schools. He couldn't afford to pay for the tuition and the living, and he didn't want me to turn into a bum, in plain English. He figured if I went to a so-called out-of-town school, all I would do is drink and run after women. So he figured, you know what, let him go to a local city college, and whatever he can do, we'll do on his own. That was a free college. We still have them.
And you made
the
a life...
The cities have free colleges. And so what is Bernie Sanders talking about?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, Michael. You know? That's what I think a lot of...
So in other words, he's a liar, a typical street liar. He's promising something that already exists.
People are labeling, oh, he wants free college for all, but...
Well, that's like saying free water. I mean, which water? Is he going to give out free Fiji water? Or it's a water that you can get from a tap? It's the same argument. We already have free water. If you want better water, you pay for it.
State University of New York right now, the college tuition, I think, is about $6,000 to $8,000 a year. That's not terrible debt to put yourself in, especially if you're going to get a job coming out making, well, like the last caller said, $8, $9 an hour. I mean, that's another thing. That's one thing that I will agree with the caller. Corporations like McDonald's or Walmart, Michael, they're making billions, hundreds of billions of dollars a year. They can afford to pay their employees a little more. It's not going to make a dent in their pocket, you know?
All right, I hear what you're saying, and from the point of view of the minimum wage worker, it's a good argument, but from the point of view of free market economics, it's a terrible argument, because if a person is willing to work for less than the other person, the employer will naturally hire that person for less money. That's the way it works.
The difference of McDonald's making $300 billion a year.
Right, so why does Obama bring in cheaper labor and cut out the poor white and the poor black? Why is Obama cutting the heart out of the poor black man, the poor black woman, the poor white woman, the poor white man by bringing in cheaper labor from Mexico? Why is he doing that?
Well, look what Walmart's done for our country. For every one Walmart, it's knocked out 10 to 20 different mom-and-pop shops around the country, you know? So, I mean, it's...
Well, okay, I understand the argument about... I know that argument, and we all like mom-and-pop stores. But you know, I'll tell you something, there's something to be said for being able to return an item you buy from a chain store. That the did you ever buy anything from a mom and pop store and try to return it?
What, for example?
Well, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, if I were to shop in a local store, let's say a clothing store, somewhere in Jackson Heights, and I took the scarf home, I could never return it. the shopkeeper would come out with gravy on his neck, and he'd say, what, are you kidding? You wore it. You cannot return. No return. But you buy a scarf in Macy's, you can wear it and bring it back. That's why people like chain stores. So there's something to be said about the economy of scale.
It's competition.
Not everything is as simple as it may sound at the outset. No, not everything is as easy. You buy a refrigerator from a local appliance store. You know what you'd have to go through in order to return the refrigerator if it didn't turn out to be what you thought it was or it was slightly defective. You buy one from Sears, no problem. They'll take it right back. And that's why people like to shop in chain stores. So, you know, the argument is not as clear-cut as we'd like to see local businesses. See, that's the problem. However, I understand, you know, there's both sides of it. Luckily, I'm not in the retail business, so I don't have to make that decision. Breaking news, two troopers are shot among six at a Greyhound station. Suspect in custody. Six people shot at Greyhound station. Where is this? I don't even know what state it's in. I have to look it up. Virginia. Horrible. Who's the suspect? We don't know. Suspect haven't been named. Among those shot are two Virginia State Police troopers and a woman. And, of course, no description of the shooter. And that's because the shooter doesn't look like Timothy McVeigh, as sure as I'm sitting here. I said it last week, remember? Was I right? Turned out I was right. And the minute it turned out the shooter didn't look like Timothy McVeigh, meaning he didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes, the story got buried by the vermin in the media like Chris Matthews, the drunk. 855-407-2828. KLIF, Carl, thanks for calling. Topic, please.
The topic is the computer programming thing. First, a quick comment. I agree with you 100% about the mom and pop store. That's a brilliant argument as to why chain stores are better, because you're absolutely right about that. I have had that happen to me. Now,
this is the difference between me and others in the media. I grew up poor, and I understand what it's like to actually shop. How many talk shows actually go out in the street? They don't even know what's going on outside their studio. They like to pretend they talk about the real world, but they're sitting there with bodyguards behind closed doors. How do they know what the real world is like? I make sure that I go out into the elbow-thrashing level of the world every day. But anyway, go on.
Right. Their limo drivers handle all that stuff for them. Anyways, on the computer programming, I think one of the things you said was part of my answer. I would program in all our founding documents and everything and make sure that it adheres to that, and it would be allowed to also, remove all the things that are not in the founding documents, things that the federal government's doing now that it has no business doing, you know, would be allowed to be removed. But as a safety factor, something that's talked about a lot is history. People forget history. Well, the computer would be programmed with the history of the world, so it would know all the things that other countries have done and the disastrous results that some of these choices have made, and that would be one of the things that would be locked out. So anything that has failed before could never be tried again by this computer system.
Beautiful. That is so brilliant. I love creative thinking, and if this was a classroom in economics and this was a graduate seminar, you'd get an A+ on your dissertation. Thanks so much, Carl. Okay, so we have an artificially intelligent president. We've given up on humans. They're all frauds and phonies and failures. And it's time to put this antiquated system of electing a man or a woman to be the leader of this country. And so we all agree that we're going to create a machine to run the nation. And we're talking about how you program that machine and what would you have it do if you just tune in, an AI president instead of a fool in the White House, another fool on the Hill, making believe he's for the people when he's robbing everyone, ripping them off. An AI wouldn't need to fly on Air Force One and Air Force Two to go on a vacation in South America and then have Chris Matthews claim that it's a business for the family and then attack someone on a comment about abortion and let him get away with virtual thievery. It's like the Bernie Madoff of the White House right now. And speaking of Bernie Madoff, who robbed billions of dollars, what would you do to make certain that a man like Bernie Madoff couldn't rip people off, for example, if you were the computer president? How would you program it? How would you restore trust in the American people? What would a computer do to make certain, or as to the level of certainty, the highest level of certainty that we could, that criminals would not be able to rig the bidding system, let us say, in the Department of Education? or that criminals in the Senate whose husbands are in business would not be able to rig the system so that the husband, a military contractor, gets military contracts and doesn't go to jail. Right now, there are families who are doing more damage to this country and making more money than Bernie Madoff did, and they're sitting inside the Senate, inside the House of Representatives. And the way they do it is they have their husband or their wife get contracts that they're not entitled to. They give them inside tracks, inside trading, in other words. And then they produce defective material. How does that go on in a free nation? Why does it go on in a free nation? Because we don't have a free press. We have drunks like Chris Matthews, who pose as journalists, but they're nothing but straw-haired Democrat hacks. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCO.
Happy birthday.
Knock it off
to
right,
you.
Right now. Knock it off. Do not want to hear any birthday anymore. Welcome back to the show. Thanks, Robert. So we're talking about, really, I really love this topic. I love exercising my mind, and I hope you do too. And we're getting such good callers that I think we're having fun on the show. It's not Cruz Trump, Cruz Trump, Cruz Trump, Cruz Trump, Cruz Trump, 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 I can't take it. So you can't take it. I had enough already. We should have been able to vote already a month ago and get it over with and move on with our country. The world's burning in some places, whatever, and we'll talk about this nonsense. So I asked you, if you could program a computer to be a president, how would you program it? We have another intelligent liberal, Joe on WABC. Go ahead, thanks for calling. What would you do if you could program a computer? Joe, you're on the radio. What would you do, Joe?
Well, don't start the part. Why don't we have a salary cap like we do a minimum wage?
Joe, stop. Speak loud and clearly. What would you do if you could run the computer? How would you program it?
I'd program it to find people that are just investors, that are just collecting dividends and salary cap them. That's what I would do. Because we're funneling too much money to a few people that are wasting all our energies by storing billions of dollars when the world's going to heck. We could be actually fixing things instead of giving...
So, in other words, you would appropriate the money that people earn through investments? Is that what it is? You just take it from them?
No, I would cap it. Cap it, yes. What's the point of...
Okay. Well, hold it. How much would you cap it at? Joe the genius, how much would you tell people they can earn? They can save? How much?
Oh, I don't know. That's to be determined by society, but a person...
Well, you're programming the computer. Tell us the amount, the maximum amount anyone could own.
A billion.
How much?
Let's say that. That is just a little bit too silly.
Oh, sorry. How much? I can't hear you.
1 billion, and that's it. You know, you shouldn't even get that much, but I'll be generous this time.
All right, so you're not a real communist. So you let a person accrue $1 billion. And where would the rest of the money go? How much more would you take away from Madoff? I'm sorry, from George Soros, the most evil man in the history of the Western world. Would you take all of his billions away from him, and what would you do with it?
Yes, I would not give it to them in the first place. Why would we allow someone to accumulate all...
What do you mean give it to him? No one gave it to him. He got it through trading currencies. No one gave it to him. He took chances and made money. So now you would say, as the government, you're going to go in and seize his money. That's what you're saying, right?
Our government has been giving these people money with all sorts of loopholes and tax breaks and everything else. We know what's going on. We've been robbed.
You mean like the two men who created Google, who pay no taxes because they only pay themselves $1 a year? And because the company pays all their expenses? You mean guys like that?
Yeah.
You mean companies like Microsoft that are headquartered in Ireland that pay almost no income tax in America? You'd fix things like that?
We're getting blackmailed by corporations that are running from...
Well, don't speak in generalities. I know corporations that pay a full 39.5% of their income to the federal government and a full 10 to 15% to the criminal state of California. So not all corporations are thieving. Only the ones who put Jerry Brown and Barack Obama in office and keep them flying around in their jets. They don't pay their fair share. And so you have a correct idea, but you're focused on the wrong people. Focus on the supporters of these bums.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
All right, instead of going through the absurdity of Cruz, Trump, Republican, Democrat, I think many people who are poor and not doing well in this country are angry, and they want something fixed. And then they see the excesses, and they think it's all based on criminality. In some cases, it certainly is. There's no question about it. And I would fix it by arresting half the people in Congress and let the innocent prove themselves innocent. But let's put that aside. You're talking about wage and price controls. When you say people are paid too much or people have earned too much, and it's those corporations, what you really want to do is impose wage and price controls. That's what it's called. Now, remember TARP. Remember Too Big to Fail. Remember Government Motors. Remember the Paysar. Those are the buzzwords of the Obama and prior to that, the Bush era, right? And they reflected presidential interference in the economy of the nation. Well, there was a president who did this. He used executive power to destroy the free enterprise system, and he was not a liberal. Or was he? It was Richard Nixon, who I called a communist at the time, and I didn't even know what politically he was. I just knew he was acting like a communist. Opened the door to China through Kissinger. He imposed wage and price controls. Everything that they would do in a government-controlled economy, he did. In August of 1971, Nixon announced, "I am today ordering a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States." So if Bernie Sanders did it, we'd scream he's a communist. But it was Richard Nixon who did that. Did you know that? And what Nixon proposed was that after a 90-day freeze, any increases in wages and prices would have to be approved by a pay board and a price commission. Did you know that? Well, that's amazing. So what was that? Well, he was followed by Bush, G.W. Bush, in 2008, who said, well, years later, "Sometimes you, quote, have to abandon free market principles to save the free market system." That was Bush, another liberal posing as a conservative. So why did Nixon impose wage and price controls? After all, there was nothing really going on in the summer of 71. Unemployment was at 6%. Inflation was low. So what happened after Nixon imposed wage and price controls? Did the sky fall? No, the opposite happened. After Nixon's announcement, the stock market rallied. The press went crazy and approved of him. Right? And the people loved it as well. 75% of the American people backed wage and price controls in polls. But the Nobel-winning economist Milton Friedman came along and he predicted that Nixon's wage and price controls would end in, quote, utter failure and the emergence into the open of the suppressed inflation, close quote. Milton Friedman said the people would pay the price. That's what he said. But no one listened to Milton Friedman. Instead, Nixon, the demagogue, coasted to a landslide reelection in 1972 over the communist leftist Senator George McGovern. It's a repeat in many ways of what we're living through right now. So what actually happened? Did price controls work to lift everyone up? Here's what happened. Ranchers stopped shipping their cattle to the market. Farmers drowned their chickens. And consumers emptied the shelves of supermarkets. In other words, we moved towards the Soviet Union in our economy. And so, ladies and gentlemen, be very careful what you wish for, because Nixon used the executive powers that he had in his hand, and he almost destroyed America, the economy of America, which is America itself. And what happened afterwards? Price hikes from the 1973 Arab oil embargo, remember those days? Well, it really caused gasoline to rise out of control. People were putting overly large gas tanks in their trunk. Did you know that? Do you remember the gas lines of the 1970s? I don't know if anyone remembers that. Lining up at gas stations around the block. And so the bold president, Richard Nixon, who took this chance on the economy with wage and price controls, almost destroyed the economy itself. So now we have a Bernie Sanders coming along who's proposing things very much like what Nixon proposed, only we're labeling him a communist, which he is. But so was Nixon, economically, in my opinion. And that's the rest of the story. The phone number here is 855-400-7282. KLIF, Jeremy, welcome. What's your topic, please?
I wanted to comment on the question that you posed about what I would program the presidential computer if it was up to me. And part of it is that made me think of it, you know, it's kind of like the beginning of your show today, and I'm a long-time listener. I'm the Shrink from Fort Worth, and I can tell you, I would program the computer with that he would have a program that would force him or force the computer to ingest art on a daily level. In other words, I would program the computer to attempt to interpret art, whether it's a novel, whether it's a painting, whether it's, you know, whether it's a book.
So this is very interesting. Why would you input a novel into a computer's memory?
Because what I would want it to do, and I, you know, obviously I don't know how I would do this, but I would want the computer to struggle to interpret it, because that's what I do. And just like you, you know, on your shows, I've been listening to you forever and have a lot of respect for you. And whenever you get like this, it's the best radio there is. Even the best radio of yours. And I've listened to all of it, because when it gets like it is now, that's all you can do. All you can do is back up, get out into the esoteric, try to interpret some stuff that you don't know, throw the hook out there and get some humanity back kind of in the game. And I think the only way that we really can explain and the only way we even survive on this planet is if it wasn't for the arts. I mean, do you think people learn how to deal with loved ones with cancer from listening to a doctor? No, they see movies about people with cancer. I mean, we learn how to live from the humanities. You know,
it's interesting. I'm going to reflect on what you're saying. Through my darkest moments in my life, when I had young children and I was rejected from universities because of my skin color, and they wouldn't hire me even though I worked for it and I wanted it very much and I deserved it. They were only hiring lesser people in order to fill quotas. I thought I would lose my mind. I went into a great tailspin and a great despair. And sometimes you can't, there's nowhere to turn to. And many nights I couldn't sleep. But I wound up reading again. I wound up reading a great number of novels again. And strangely enough, the novels helped pull me out of the tailspin, because I saw a different world. I read a lot of philosophy, poetry. I remember reading Henry Miller's Black Spring, one of the most interesting books I've ever read. Just a novel, but it's not just a novel. He was an artist, and he took me to places I had never been. And as a result of that, I was able to cope with the world, in other words. Why? By taking me to another world or other worlds, I was able to live in this world. Does that make sense to you as a shrink?
It sure does. And you know how you mentioned HAL 2000, the computer? You know something interesting? If you take the next letter in the alphabet after each of the letters of HAL, it stands for IBM. I mean, Kubrick was making a statement with that supercomputer that far transcends just what you could pick up maybe from first viewing. You know, when he you know the
he was ethereal in his thinking.
He was amazing, and the way that he worked, I mean, he was almost a madman with his craft. As a matter of fact, last night I was watching a movie called Artificial Intelligence that was directed by Steven Spielberg. That originally was directed by Stanley Kubrick, but he didn't feel like he had what it took to put the message across, and he got Spielberg to finish it for him. Another amazing science fiction movie.
Yeah, I remember the original Kubrick AI. That was a frightening movie, with the plastic parts of the artificially created humans, where pieces fall off and they're replaced. I was astounded watching it.
Well, see, I even turned to your program, and when you're talking about the arts, I mean, that's the time that I feel, you know, I feel it's exuberant. You know, I feel ready to listen to you tomorrow, get all involved in the politics game because of your show today. I mean,
I don't want to hear any more about Trump and Cruz. It's diminishing my brain.
Who can do it? I mean, who can do it?
I'm certainly not interested in Hillary. I know who she is. I'm not interested in Bernie Sanders. I read Das Kapital when I was 16. I mean, I've heard it all before. What's there in any of this that I want to hear? Nothing.
I'll tell you what, when I go in the booth, I'm going to write in Kubrick's name, or yours. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm only running for president of the Savage Nation, and I appreciate your listenership, because that's the only vote that counts, to be perfectly frank with you. Well, if you want to continue this will be fun. A little bit more, then we'll go to the news of the day. WSBA, Pennsylvania. Jason, go ahead. What's your topic?
Hi, Michael. I'd like to talk about the qualities of an AI president as well. So I think one of the biggest issues with this is that machines are great at recognizing complex patterns. So because of that, they're going to take a lot of jobs, you know, by the time we get to a president, like medical imaging, manufacturing, surgery, financial analysts, you know, the list goes on.
So, but you're not answering the question. If you were programming an AI president, how would you program it?
So this is what I would want to program it with. I would want it to be able to, in a very advanced way, be able to determine how funds should be allocated from these machines that have taken our jobs, whether it should be from partial ownership of the robots directly, or if they're shares of the businesses that we should receive that we would have been part of, or if the government just needs to set up a larger social system.
What you're saying is what, the government should create wealth?
No, I'm saying that the production will now be done all by machines. So all of the wealth is being created by the companies that own those machines, and the workers will no longer carry wages.
And so what's the solution? How would you program your computerized president?
So I think what I would do is I would have the system set up so that each of those machines would have ownership by each individual. And
okay, let's start with a practical matter. You have radicals in the streets who are opposing their communism in the form of racism. They're using racism as a weapon to bring down society and to take what is not theirs. So they create groups such as Occupy Wall Street or Black Lives Matter. And all they really are thugs who want to steal things that are not theirs. How would you deal with them?
So with them, so now this is kind of where that last caller in humanity, that's where that would play. Because really, if a machine is running things, most likely, if the best way to program it would be by statistics. So if...
But what would you do with rabble in Occupy movements that are being funded by an evil genius like George Soros who wants to bring America to its knees? How would you handle that if you were a programmer for a president? What would you do with these people, these vermin in the streets who have no belief whatsoever in what they're doing, except for a few small number of street radicals? What would you do about them? Would you still permit free assembly, free speech, or would you curtail those?
I think that a machine governing by statistics would probably say that that isn't the best for society. So there would have to be limitations to that. And
There you go. That's right. A machine would say that if you're going to disrupt traffic, if you're going to block traffic on the Brooklyn Bridge, that's not going to be permitted. And so what would you do with such rabble-rousers? Remember, every society has troublemakers in it who use any excuse whatsoever to cause havoc and trouble. They don't even know what they're doing it for other than to cause a ruckus. They're disturbed people who like to disturb an orderly society. How would you handle them?
Right, so if there's a machine president, then there would also probably be a mechanized police force, so you'd really have to cart people away. If they're blocking the highway, they'd just have to be taken away because that's best for society. But long term, that's the bigger question, you know, would you fill jails with people like that because they're disrupting society and lowering the quality of people's lives? That's...
Well, I'm glad you put it that way. Yes, they're disrupting society just to disrupt society. And they're being funded by one of the most evil people in the Western Hemisphere, George Soros. How would you curtail a maniac like him, who seems to get pleasure out of ruining America and the West? How would you curtail a man like that? Would you permit a man like that to use his billions to destroy a society? In the name of what? What is he doing it for? What do progressives do this for? No one knows the answer. No one knows the real answer. I do. I'm a Hal 9000. Why is Soros disrupting the Western world? Why does he fund the refugee movements? Why does he want Muslims to flood Europe and to destroy the Anglo-Saxon nature of the European nations, to be very clear? Okay? The Anglo-Saxon Christian nature of Europe. Why would a maniac like Soros be doing a thing like this? Why would he want Africans and Middle Easterners to flood into Europe? Does he hate the cathedrals and the museums that much? Would he like to see them replaced with a sand dune? What is it that he wants to achieve? Why is he doing it? Should people with that amount of wealth, who are notably insane, be able to continue their insanity simply because they're rich? Interesting questions, back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO. Wage and price controls, introduced not by a communist, but by Richard Nixon. So progressives out there, I know some of you listen to the show, and if you could program a computer to be president rather than the flawed human beings that are running the country, have run the country, will run the country, how would you program the computer? And so some of you would say, well, I would just take Karl Marx's Das Kapital, create an algorithm out of it, and put it into the computer, and we'd have a perfect society. Well, that's been tried. It led to the death of 30 million Russians. That's been tried by Mao Zedong. That led to the death of 60 million Chinese after much humiliation and torture. That's been tried, Bernie. It led to the death of 3 million Cambodians, so I don't think that would work. And many of you still espouse the same rubbish, that all we need is pure communism for society to be just. We'll all be wearing the same blue uniforms with the red stars. Except you, of course. You will be commissars directing the others in the blue uniforms with red stars what to do. And so, therefore, it's not a simple answer to this question of how would you program a computer to run the country. But in my heart of hearts, I actually think it's going to come to that. I believe that in some future time, probably later than sooner, people will give up on selecting an individual to be president because they're all terrible. They're all flawed. They're all, in one way or another, bound to fail us because they're human. And some are worse humans than others. And as a result, I would say that we're going to see the day, I won't. Maybe some of you listening or kids will. You will see the time when a supercomputer is used to be the president of the United States. And then we will not have pantsuits, toupees, snakes, Bibles. We'll have rational thought. This is the Savage Nation. Thanks for listening on my birthday. I'll be back for another big hour. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7287. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We're all fed up with everyone running for office. Even if we support someone, we're fed up with them. I don't care who you are, you know I'm right. If you support Hillary, you can't stand her. If you support Bernie, you know he's a liar and a failure, but you'll support him because he represents some of the policies that you want. And on the other side, the same is true. You know that and I know that. Why? Because humans are flawed. And for that reason, I'm saying to you, looking ahead, I don't know how many years, centuries, my lifetime, who knows, that eventually this country will have to be governed by artificial intelligence for us to pull us out of this morass we're in. Certainly to fight world terrorism, we're going to have to use something more intelligent than the CIA and the other so-called intelligence agencies, because they're run by human beings who are bureaucrats. And as bureaucrats, they care mainly about their own careers first and about America's security second, which is why we're losing the war on terror. And then there's the other element of pure greed, which is to keep the war on terror alive, means they have a job. I was told that in the late 50s, I was told that the National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society do not want a cure for cancer. They never did, because if there was ever a cure for cancer, when we know now there are dozens of forms or hundreds of forms of cancers, if ever a cure was found, they would be out of business. So they were not in business to find a cure for cancer. They were in a business to make you think that they were going to find a cure for cancer, so they would stay in business, both on the research level, the fundraising level, etc. Same thing is true with the war on terror. They don't want the war on terror stopped. They want it controlled. Because the day the war on terror really wins, the war on terror, they're out of business. Then we don't need the CIA or the other agencies that are doing nothing. At least that's how cynics see the world. And so a computer might straighten that out, and we have a supercomputer running the country. Maybe the supercomputer could figure out how to run things properly. And so I've invited callers to call the show, progressives or conservatives, and tell me how you construct a memory or a program for the computer to operate under, you know, under any circumstance. What would it do? And then a gentleman called who was a psychiatrist, who listens to the show regularly. And he said he loves the show, he loves these ideas, he thinks it transcends talk radio, which of course I want to hear. It makes me feel good and validates me as a human being. And then something occurred to me. I was thinking about music for that moment. And I was thinking about a piece of music by the jazz great Horace Silver. And my mind leapt to my novel Countdown to Mecca, which did okay. I mean, it wasn't like raging runaway Tom Clancy bestseller, but it's a darn good book. It'll be out in paperback in a month or so. And there's an entry in it that I want to read to you about a man and a woman making love. And so they're having a bite to eat on his boat. She's an intelligence agent, and this is Jack Hatfield. And while they were locked, here's what I wrote. Forget about how we got there. While they were locked together in the primal entanglement, Jack sought to stare straight in her eyes. He didn't look away. She was different. With her like this, it wasn't solely the sexual contact and release that kept him hooked. It was her being itself that drew him in. As their writhing entanglement reached its point of frenzy, Jack's brain heard Horace Silver's horn reaching for the impossible note. Just as Silver had maxed his lungs in The Natives Are Restless Tonight, seeking that impossible note, Jack felt something almost snap as he sought the perfect bond with Dover. She pulled at him with her athletic strength. And then a small tear appeared. Jack thought, it doesn't matter if you hit that note. All that matters is reaching with all your talents. I think it's excellent. I mean, I'm reading it. I don't think it's even corny. I think it's good. It's about reaching for that impossible note. And that's what we're trying to do here on The Savage Nation. We're reaching for the impossible note in how to govern a society. And that leads us to a news story. First time in human history, people 65 and older will outnumber children under 5. CNSnews.com. Sometime in the next 4 years, the global population of human beings who are 65 and older will surpass those under 5 for the first time. For the first time, people age 65 and older will outnumber children under 5, says the report, entitled An Aging World. Sorry. These two age groups will then continue to grow in opposite directions. By 2050, the proportion of the population 65 and older, now at 15%, will be more than double that of children under age 5 at 7.2%. This unique demographic phenomenon of the crossing is unprecedented, says the Census Bureau. There's not any further commentary on it. But it's an interesting thought. So the old are going to dominate and the young are going to be diminished in numbers. Let's not look at why. We know the reasons why. But it says something about the future of the planet that we're on, doesn't it? It says something. It says a lot of things. So we're talking about esoteric things, but what is a just society is what we're really talking about. How would a just society operate? So let's start with the elderly. Would a just society keep the elderly alive as long as that person is still breathing and has brain activity, even though it may be a vegetable inside a human form? Is that what a just society does, spends millions of dollars a year with a patient hooked up to machines for no reason? Or does a just society terminate that electrical energy at a certain point when there's no point in keeping the person alive? I realize the ethical question I'm raising. Believe me, I know the ramifications. What about the person who's not really sick? What about the person who's in a temporary coma? What about the cases of those who've come back from their disease? I get it. Okay, so it's a very complicated question. But for the sake of discussion, which is what I'm doing, you're leading a discussion, which is what I'm good at, which is why you listen to the show. I'm leading a discussion. I don't know you, but you're interested, I would hope. It's a great, great topic. You have to answer that question for the old. Now, what about for the young? What would you do for the young? What are they entitled to? Would you keep every child who is born alive at any expense, even if the child is born as a twisted vegetable and can never function as a human being? Sensitive question. I had a brother who was born like that. It's affected me to this day. So don't think I have an immediate answer to that question. I have many answers to that question. I've written many books where Jerome is mentioned in the book. In fact, my Teddy book coming out next month in May. There's a whole chapter on how I learned to communicate with audiences and animals, for that matter. This is a very similar thing. You're an invisible, silent being to me, the audience. You don't really exist as individuals to Michael Savage. You exist as an inanimate mass that I have to move. Now, if I'm in front of a live audience, I can see if I'm affecting you or reaching you, rather, as any performer can or any speaker can. They know when they're moving you, or else they shouldn't even be on the lectern. They should be like Bill O'Reilly, just run around and give stump speeches and have the fools pay for it. Come in, fly in for 30 minutes, make $100,000 and leave. That's good if you have stooges who are willing to pay for that. Why not? It's a free country. But if you're a real performer who wants to leave himself on the stage, as it is said amongst performers, meaning you give it your all and there's nothing left of you when you get off the stage, as it is said amongst performers, as I too often do, which I shouldn't do anymore, because I don't know how much of me there is to give every day, but let's say you're that kind of performer. And how do you know if you're communicating with an audience you can't see? It's an amazing question. You have to have a sixth sense about whether you're communicating with an audience you can't see. You have to imagine your audience. You literally have to imagine someone listening to you in a car, in a house, in an office, in a prison cell. I was told that there are guards at San Quentin who love my show. I ran into a prison guard on a ferry last Friday night. He invited me to visit San Quentin. He said, "You have a big audience there." I said, "Who, amongst prisoners?" He said, "No, amongst the prison guards." So I said, "That's nice." He said, "Would you like to visit?" I said, "Yes, absolutely. I'd like to do a tour of San Quentin." I said, "Can I tour the death chamber?" He said, "Yes." I said, "As long as you give me the key to get out." Well, I haven't heard from him yet. So I'm saying is there is an audience out there, but how do we know they exist? Well, you have to sense that they exist. You have to imagine they exist. You have to sense they exist. And then I guess you look at your numbers, your ratings, and you find out if your show is being listened to. In some cases it is, some cases it isn't. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. Sometimes your audience is there, sometimes it isn't. So the point is that after a certain number of years of talk radio, you pretty much have an audience, or you wouldn't be there to begin with. You have a very loyal following of people who will go wherever you are. They will follow you. They want to hear you. You become a part of the geography of their mind. Whatever time of day you're on, they're going to find you because they need you. And that's why that validates your existence. And that's actually my birthday message to all of you who are a member of that elite group. I want to thank you for allowing me to be here so long, and I hope I'm here for many years to come. But that's not in my hands. It's in the hands of others and the hands of God himself. So, my friends, we are talking about the ideal society at the end of the day. We're talking about reaching for the impossible note, whether it be in a society or in a relationship or in playing an instrument. In any endeavor, we're trying to reach for that impossible note. We get into bed. We get under the covers, we pull up a book, watch a TV show, and we snuggle in, and we want to reach for the impossible note of total comfort. Do you achieve it? I do. I actually do. There are things I do where I hit the impossible note. If I ride a bicycle a certain way for a certain amount of time, I hit the impossible note. I you know, you must have that in your life. I mean, at a certain point, you reach for the impossible note, and you hit it. So the point I'm making is, what do you do with a society that's so broken and fractured as ours is, with so many malcontents and troublemakers who are being encouraged by an evil president and an evil man like George Soros? How do you deal with pure evil? Can a computer be programmed to not become pure evil if it were to become our president or the supermind that runs the society? How would you know if this... What if it created this perfect society where everything was harmonious and all the malcontents were taken care of with medication or prison where they belong? In other words, if you can't control the malcontents with drugs or jail, if they just want to wreck things and tie up traffic just simply for the sake of ruckus, which is what they teach them in Berkeley, and then you create this perfectly orderly society, okay, what happens after a long period of time? Would the supercomputer become bored of having achieved the perfect society, and would it become malevolent? What a science fiction novel that would make. I'll be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So look, we don't have much time. This is not a college class. We're not sitting around with in an Athenian theater. It's commercial radio. But still in all, there's such a dearth of this, of ideas in the world of politics, I can fall asleep. I get angry listening to the stupidity that I hear. Never mind the fights between the guys or Hillary stump speeches, which I've heard like a broken record, or Bernie, I've heard, you know, the bad college teachers I had. So where do we turn for our ideas? So I'm trying to throw some of it in there. Now, this show is called The Savage Nation, right? Where do you think I got the title of the show from? I got it from Plato's Republic, which I was required to read in Jamaica High School in Queens, New York. It's not even taught anymore, so far as I know, except in philosophy classes. And I'm sure that it's taught by some mean-faced, clipped-haired woman who will tell you that Plato was a racist and a homophobe, and that he didn't know anything about global warming caused by Greek togas and the raising of cattle. But Plato's Republic is something I want to talk about a little later on. Right now I want to ask you, the callers, how you would construct an AI to run the world, or to run America. Let's start with run America. Let's not talk about running the world. Let's start with our own country, with the enemies we face. What would an AI do to ISIS in the next 90 days to annihilate them from the planet? What would a progressive do? How would you program an artificially intelligent machine to win this war against ISIS? We don't even have to categorize what they're doing. If you don't know what they're doing, you can't even answer the question. If you do know what they're doing, then you know what must be done. Let's put it to you that way. Anthony on WDRC in Connecticut, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Happy birthday. I'm one of your followers.
Okay, so what's on your mind? How would you do it? What would you do?
Well, pertaining to George Soros, what I do is reverse George Soros, reverse engineer George Soros himself, because human beings are essentially computers. It's not actually that complicated, if you can understand that concept.
So why would George Soros, the computer, hate the country so much that this malevolent malware called George Soros would fund people to riot in the streets, tie up bridges and roads, attack police and try to tear down society? Why does this malevolent computer, this malcontent, do this?
I think it starts with his childhood. His childhood, because your childhood is the foundation for the rest of your life.
So because he was a victim of the Holocaust, he wants to create one, is that it?
Something along those lines. If you program in all the data points of the decisions that he made during his life, you could come up with an effective program to combat against him and his thinking.
You know, it's interesting. Your point is very interesting. Years ago, I had on this show Mr. Cohen, who developed the neutron bomb, one of the great minds of our time. We have the tape somewhere. I haven't played it in years. I'm going to save it for tomorrow. One of the most astonishing interviews. I did it when I was on KSFO as a local host. No one else ever interviewed him like this in the history of radio. He wrote a book years later, an autobiography, where he said that when he was a child, his mother gave him, his mother used to give him enemas and purges and scrub him with soap. She was always trying to clean him. She made him have, it's astounding. He said, so as a result of that, he was conditioned to want to do that to the world. So he created a radiation bomb that caused the very same symptoms that his mother induced in him. Nausea, diarrhea, vomiting. Those are the symptoms of radiation poisoning. And he said, I suppose that's why I did this. Can you believe that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's astounding what you just brought back to my mind. Thank you for the call. I'll be back in a minute to continue the discussion of the ideal society so we can get away from the ordinary.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
An example of a schmaltzy, sentimental tune that, of the kind of music that I grew up, you know, popular music, my age, kid taking buses to school, to work, slush, drudgery, dreaming of the future. But in the background, there were hopeful songs that gave you, inspiring songs, that gave you hope for the future. Something beautiful, you know, that you'd look at a baby after that and you'd see beauty in the baby. You'd look at a leaf and you'd see the beauty in a leaf. Where is that today? The pornographic nature of the media today is such that there's no inspiration anywhere, or very little about inspiration. Well, you listen to Hillary Clinton giving a speech, the demagoguery, the low level of her language. And all the others, I mean, she's no different, only we know what we're going to get with her. There's no mystery what we'll get with her. More crime, more deceit, more lies, and more mania. So I keep reaching for the impossible note. So today I'm talking about the ideal society. Where did I get it from? Plato's Republic. Plato's Republic, read in high school. In English, of course, not in Greek. I don't know any Greek at all. And what was Plato's Republic about? It's a dialogue written by a philosopher named Plato, written around 380 BC, where he talks about the order and character of the just city-state and the just man. The just city-state and the just man, what should it be like? And he talks about justice. What is justice? And how do you create such a society? And so in this book, Socrates, along with various Athenians and foreigners, discussed the meaning of justice, and they examined whether or not the just man is actually happier than the unjust man. And they do so by looking at different cities. And there were dialogues. I remember reading them, and they were so interesting to me. And they discussed the theory of forms, the immortality of the soul, the roles of the philosopher in a poetry in society, just like your average rap singer does today, just like the average person that's featured in the New York Post or the Daily News, or the San Francisco Chronicle, for example. They elevate humanity, in other words, to the highest possible levels of society. And one dialogue in particular that I remember as a kid was between him and a slave, or his young companions, Glaucon. I never forget Glaucon talking to Socrates. And Glaucon is the doubter. He's the young doubter. And he challenges the old man. And Glaucon gives a speech in which he argues that the origin of justice was in social contracts aimed at preventing one from suffering injustice without having the ability to take revenge. And then he says that all those who actually practice justice do so unwillingly, and they only do it out of fear of punishment. Then he argues that the life of the unjust man is far more blessed than that of the just man. And so he challenges Socrates in this book to prove that justice is not only desirable. See, we assume that justice is desirable, but we don't even know if it is. So Glaucon, in this ancient dialogue, challenges Socrates to prove that justice is not only desirable, but that actually belongs to the highest class of desirable things. Those desired both for their own sake and their consequences. So you can read it on your own if you want to, you know, not watch television tonight or scan through it. It's worth reading. I hope your children are still reading it. And so Socrates then lays out a perfect society. And he was way ahead of his time. He says that both male and female guardians be given the same education. That all wives and children be shared. Well, that's something that a commune tried. I don't think that worked out too well. He was a communist, actually. He said that ownership of private property ought to be prohibited amongst the guardians of the state. I would agree that it should be prohibited amongst Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and Barbara Mikulski, but not for me. I think that anyone who wants to run the country should be penniless and receive a mere salary and live in government housing. The rest of us should have a free society and a free market. But then he says, until age 18, would-be guardians of the perfect state should be engaged in basic intellectual study and physical training, followed by 2 years of military training. It sounds like Israel, doesn't it? Just like America, military training. Next, they receive 10 years of mathematics until age 30. That would really work with the Occupy movement. And then 5 years of dialectic training. And then guardians spend the next 15 years as leaders, trying to lead people from the cave. You have to read the allegory of the cave, which is unbelievable. And at the age of 50, when they reach 50, they are finally aware of the form of good, and they're totally mature and ready to leave. So then he goes into the lifestyle of the guardians in the future society. It's fascinating stuff. I haven't read it in so many years. And I'll never forget one of the books where they, in the dialogue, is, so what would be done with the artists and musicians? he asks in the dialogue. And the interlocutor says, oh, the artists and musicians lead our children astray. They would be banned from the Republic. I thought that was interesting, considering what movies are being put out there and video games and the garbage and filth and violence that are produced, all in the name of profit. You talk about wage and price controls. How about vermin control? How about mental pollution control? How about controlling the genius, the brilliant madmen who run Hollywood, who produce nothing but violence and filth on a daily basis, and then scream about violence and filth and say that we should have our guns taken away from us like Harvey Weinstein? I don't know one movie's ever produced where there wasn't a gun in it. Well, how about a lunatic like this actor whose name I forget? The guy is the hypocrite. There's so many of them. Anti-gun, anti-violence. Every movie is either bashing someone's head in with a gun, killing them with an axe. Penn, yeah, Sean Penn, real just man. Every other speech is like a pothead so out of control, he can hardly form a sentence. And they consider that a journalist at the San Francisco newspaper. So he goes and interviews the Iranians, the worst terrorist state on the nation. They call him a journalist. Or he goes and cavorts with the South American dictator that the people hated. Journalist. Then he comes back and lives like a pagan king in Hollywood. Do they not understand we know the difference? We know they're liars and hypocrites? So I don't have to go on with my examples, but I am saying that even ancient societies understood the dangers of unlicensed activities. Let's put it to you that way. Look what our First Amendment has wrought. We all love the First Amendment. I live by it. I don't want any censorship of what I say. Yet I have internal censorship in everything I say. There's not a word I say on this show that is not internally controlled, because I realize I'm walking on a tightrope. One wrong word, and I'm out of business. Look what they just did to Trump, the drunk. Look what the drunk just did to Trump. The drunk who worked for the crazy Tip O'Neill. Tip O'Neill was a drunk Speaker of the House. Strawhair from MSNBC was his altar boy. Now he pretends to be a journalist all these years. He lays in wait like the snake he is and tries to trip Trump up on one word. I hope he survives it. Probably will. Who knows? I live and die by the word. So what I'm saying is we live and die by the word. That's our business. If you can't do it, you know, say you don't like the heat, get out of the kitchen. It's that simple. I enjoy the tightrope. I enjoy very much walking on the tightrope. So what I'm saying is, we all have a form of self-censorship, except in Hollywood. They have no censorship whatsoever. So they put out the most pornographic imagery imaginable in the form of violence. To me, the violence is far worse than any sexuality that could be shown. The violence that is continuous, the gratuitous murder, the butchering, the chopping people up. And, of course, it dements the minds of the sick and the weak and makes them do these horrible things. They mimic the stuff that's created by the people in Hollywood who go out to the desert, live in a motel, take peyote, and imagine the most horrible things to write a film script that will appeal to the Caesars of Hollywood. Yeah, we'll buy that. Yeah, we'll take that kid. That's good. So that's what we're living with now. You don't think that there should be some kind of controls over the maniacs in Hollywood? You don't think we need some kind of controls over the lunacy of Hollywood? I do. I certainly do. So what am I saying? There shouldn't be a First Amendment? Well, aren't there limits to the First Amendment? You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Then why should you be able to produce violence in an incendiary nation, a nation that's about to blow up? Why do you give them total freedom? So these are questions that I think need to be talked about in this perfect society run by a computer. And look, all I can do right now is sketch some ideas out for you, as I've done for the last 3 hours. We're not going to arrive at, you know, any solution here of what the perfect computer would do to create a perfect society. But, you know, if I can advance people's minds to think about something more than the stupidity that I'm hearing in this campaign, maybe you'll feel as good as I do talking about something else. For example, here is Hillary Clinton, a woman who thinks that she should be president simply because she's a woman, in clip 3. You have to listen to the not only the stupidity of what she says, but ask yourself if you really want to listen to this for 4 to 8 years. Listen to this.
I look forward, if he is the nominee and I'm the nominee, to really going after him on issues. Because remember, the Republicans still have not gone after him on issues in large measure because they agree with him on so many issues. So when they start moaning and groaning.
Stop. Stop. Do you want to hear that for 4 to 8 years? Do you want to listen to this childish gibberish coming out of this Harridan's mouth? Do you want to live in a nation that that's what you're going to listen to? Like Angela Merkel in pants? Look at what Angela Merkel has done to Germany, a once proud nation. She has destroyed Germany, flooded Germany with Africans and Middle Easterners of another faith entirely, and they're rampaging through her own nation, and she's not been thrown in jail. Instead, what they did was throw anyone in jail who wants her to stop it. As I said to you on this show several months ago, what Hitler did was invade other nations to impose his view of Germany upon other nations. And he killed millions of people. He was a maniac, right? We all agree with that. What she's doing and what Obama's doing is invading their own nations. Obama is invading America by bringing in people from other countries without the American people wanting this tyranny of invasion. So what is this? Well, it's exactly what I'm talking about. We have a demagogue in the White House. There's a demagogue in Germany. There are demagogues throughout the West. The gap between rich and poor continues to widen. Eventually, there will be a revolt by the underclass, which will bring about a new form of democracy. And so in this new democracy, there'll be maximum freedom. And then power will be distributed evenly. And then what will happen is then you'll have another gap emerging with this freedom between the intelligent and the less intelligent. There'll be a new class of rich and a new class of poor, as you can see in China. And then eventually there'll be mob rule again. The mob will be controlled with propaganda. Then we'll have oligarchy, which will be exploited by a demagogue like Obama, which will lead to tyranny, which is what we have, where the city and the people are enslaved to the tyrant, who uses his guards in the media to remove the most intelligent social commentators and individuals from the public dialogue, and to provoke warfare to consolidate his position as leader. And that way you see that tyranny is the most unjust regime of all. And that's a sketch of what might happen. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. I want to thank you for your years of support. I have no announcement to make. I mean, it's not like a death knell. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. The country can't be supported. Viva El Castro. No, it's not like that. I hope to be here tomorrow and Monday, although there are strange things happening in San Francisco. And we'll know more about that on Monday. All sorts of new programming things happening. No one even knows who's going where. But I want to talk at the end, we're talking about an ideal society, how would you program a computer to run a society who could do a better job than humans? And I found it to be an interesting conversation. Who knows if it'll ever happen? I think we'd do better with a computer than we would with what we have right now. I think we'd have more rational decisions being made, and certainly I don't think you can bribe a computer, nor is a computer capable of lust or revenge, so far as I know. Or making decisions based upon irrational pressures. I myself am a very emotional person, or I can be. Last night I watched a movie called Max, for example, by chance, about a dog, a war dog. And it opens with a war scene in Iraq where his master is killed by a terrorist. And the next scene ripped my heart. I almost started to cry on the couch in the dark room. I had to control myself because my dog was next to me. They show the coffin, you know, and the soldiers in the box, the family in a small church. And the dog cries and he runs up to the coffin and rip your guts out, right? So the dog is given to the dead soldier's younger brother to raise. And the kid's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a juvie. And by having to raise this wild kind of war dog, the kid learns about responsibility and nobility and this and that. Fabulous movie. I didn't think it would be so good. So even Hollywood is capable of nobility every once in a while. Whether it did well or not, I don't know. I have no idea whether the movie did well. I was moved by it. What I'm saying is the human element is what I try to bring to you in some ways every day on this show. And I've said to you many times that there's more in the range of human emotion than rage or hatred or anger. And this is all we're hearing now. Rage, anger, rage, anger, rage, anger, sarcasm, rage, anger, rage, anger. Well, they're human emotions, but every day? No. So maybe today we touched on some other human emotions, or maybe we try to even avoid emotions by talking about rationality. When have you last heard a candidate talk about rationality and that I'll be the most rational candidate of all and that I can bring more rationality to this office than anyone who is currently running? Have you heard any of the candidates say that? Would the average person voting even know what the word rational means? Or would they think that you're talking about dog rations? Thank you for listening. Michael Savage, be here tomorrow. Thanks for listening for my birthday. Good night.